Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. Well, this is a big night in this country. It's election evening, and I would be remiss if I didn't make a few brief comments. I had not intended to address the political issue. You get enough of it on television right now, tonight, but I've got to say something. That's all. Simply stated, I must say something. It's a big Republican night. They probably will take control of the Senate. They will control both houses in Washington. They now have the responsibility to pass legislation, and I'm assuming legislation will be passed by both the House and the Senate. They have to make sure that the legislation they pass is not weighted towards certain philosophies that don't fly in this country anymore, and the Republicans don't seem to know it, even though they have a victory tonight. Bills are going to be passed, and they're going to go on to the president. And let's give the president some bills he can sign into law. That's just the way it is. I worry if the Republicans really are going to be able to pass that much legislation that is reasonable. My concern is the Tea Party faction in the House of Representatives. No one seems to talk about them. They are not going to change because of this election, and they're going to be imposing their will or trying to impose their will on the Senate. Obama's got to play ball more, too. I wish he'd invite these guys over to the White House to play cards, have a drink, come on over and have Saturday dinner with my wife and I, come to Camp David. This guy does not know how to schmooze, and a politician should know how to schmooze, even the opposition. Clinton was faced with this problem in the last 2 years of his second term. The Republicans took both houses, and he got some of his best legislation, and I believe most of the legislation signed into law during those 2 years. He knew how to work together with them. They finally knew, the Republicans, how to work with him. I will probably have more to say on this political issue next week. Those are my brief thoughts for tonight, however. Now let me move on to this crazy world we live in. It isn't just the United States, it's the whole world that's screwed up. I want to go first to the United Nations. Let's start this way. The United States is, you know, that light on top of the mountain. We are purported to be the richest nation in the world. We are the have-nots. We are the haves, rather, as opposed to the have-nots. Everyone wants to come to America. We do good for our people. And all of a sudden this year, the United Nations, an organization that is generally critical of countries that aren't doing what they should for their people, is being critical of the United States. First time in my memory, the United Nations has been critical of the United States. First, earlier this year, they got involved with the Detroit water situation. And they said, you know, water is a fundamental right. And that's very understandable, at least from my perspective. I understand you got to have water, you have to have air. If you don't, you don't exist. You don't continue to live. A court did not agree with the United Nations. I felt ashamed that the United Nations had to speak to the United States and say water is a fundamental right. Now, this past week, the United Nations has come out again with a statement concerning the United States. This time, the results of a United Nations study, and that study said that one-third of the children living in the United States live in poverty. One-third of the children living in the United States live in poverty. What a shame. The richest nation on earth. The country, the whole world basically looks up to. And this is just typical of the 1%, 99% problem. You can't put all the money in the pockets of the 1%. You have to spread the wealth. If you don't spread the wealth as it used to be following World War II and up till 20 years ago when you had a middle class, then people are going to hurt. And people includes children. Children are part of families. So I'm not surprised that one-third of the children in our country live in poverty. And what I really feel as a bottom line here is, all of a sudden, I sense that we are becoming, in a certain fashion, a third world country, because things just aren't working right. One-third of our people are children in poverty, children living in automobiles, you know, abandoned cars. They go to school in the morning from abandoned cars. I've talked about this in the last couple of years several times, how the kids get up in the morning, they go to school, they sleep in an abandoned car every night. A disgrace. This is the United States. And water, we're denying and depriving people of water. I don't care. They owe $150. We're becoming a third world country in many respects. Moving on now, we're going to go to Syria. I'm going to be critical of the United States again. And I don't like being critical, but when something's wrong, people have to speak up. Now, I'm going to talk about hashish, Syria and hashish. Hashish is a form of marijuana. Last week, I spoke of Afghanistan and opium. I pointed out Afghanistan. We fought a war there for 10 years. We fought two wars. We spent $7.4 billion in the last 10 years in Afghanistan to rid Afghanistan of their opium growth. They grow poppies. The farmers are rich there. And what happens now? A study comes out in 2013, Afghanistan enjoyed its highest production of opium ever. They grew more than any other year, to the tune of $3 billion. That opium ends up on the streets of New York, Chicago, San Francisco. It ends up on our streets in the United States. Now, this week, we learn about Syria and their hash and their marijuana growth. Syria puts out the best marijuana in the world. I don't know this personally. This is what is reported. It is the leading producer of marijuana in the world. Hezbollah really controls it in Syria. Now, there's been a war over in Syria. We have not been directly involved, but they've been fighting for the last 10 years, these people. Assad, the Sunnis, the Shiites, now ISIS, they're all over there killing each other. And during all this time, they're still able to grow marijuana. They are the biggest producers of marijuana in the world. And it's the best. That's the other thing. It's called golden. Their pot is golden something. This is hashish. It's a richer form of it. And the hash and the marijuana from Syria, like the opium from Afghanistan, ends up on the streets of New York, Chicago, and San Francisco. It's on the streets of the United States. Now, I ask this question. If Afghanistan has been devastated by terrible wars for 10 years, if Syria has been devastated by terrible wars for 10 years, how can these countries continue to grow so much opium and so much pot? The farmers who grow it and the warlords who are involved, they all get rich. These people must have a deal. When they're fighting, everybody stays away from the poppy fields and the pot fields, because everybody must be sharing in this. It's a political thing in both countries. Graft and corruption goes to the people at the highest level. Assad's probably getting rich over this, and the leaders of Afghanistan have. And there's sort of an unwritten law. Don't burn, don't war on the poppy fields, don't do it on the pot fields. A disgrace. Want to go to ISIS for a moment. Remember 6 months ago, 200-plus Nigerian school girls were stolen. Were stolen by an ISIS group in Africa. The leader of ISIS is this Boko Haram. Smart guy, by the way. News came out this week, which was, news. There's been two forms of news. In the last 2 weeks, we've been hearing from the Nigerian government that they were working with ISIS and were close to an accommodation, a result, an understanding where the 200-plus girls would be released. 2 days ago, it comes out from Bokar, the big boss, Boko Haram's offices, for want of a better term. One of his leaders said, this is a crock. This is a crock. We already sold the girls off. They're gone. They don't exist anymore. Because we know how this works. The ISIS steals girls all over where they go. Then they take them. If they're not of the Islam religion, they must, if they're Christians, for example, they must convert or die. Most of them convert. Then what Boko Haram does, he sells them for $12 a piece. I have told you this before. I have reported it before. For $12 a piece to his soldiers. This guy is smart because he's got young kids who are soldiers. These are young girls. He gives them a woman. He gives them sex. All right? And their testosterone, you know, it's big in these years. And they got sex. They got a wife for $12. And if they don't want a wife, he has Iraqi women who, regardless of what their religion is, he sells them as sex slaves for $12 to these guys. This guy's smart with what he's doing. He's keeping his young fighters happy. He pays them a salary every week. Whoever heard of this? He pays them a salary every week. And he's getting bigger. He's got money. He's got money. He captures banks. He's selling oil from oil fields. They say he's taking in $1 million a month just off the oil exports he's doing. Well, all I'm saying is, I don't think, I could be wrong, because now we got two thoughts out there. I don't know who's telling us the truth. But my sense would say he hasn't been taking care of these girls nicely for 6 months. He had to get rid of them. They're a burden. Why'd he steal them in the first place? To insult people, of course, and to take care of his soldiers. Now we go to Japan. It's interesting. I'm going to talk about sex here, too, in Japan. Something has happened in Japan in the last 15 years. It is said today that Japan is experiencing a celibacy syndrome. A celibacy syndrome. It appears that the young people, 17 through their late 30s, are avoiding sexual activity, male and female alike. This is strange. I agree. But you got to read. There's tons of material on this. It's amazing also to me because the testosterone level is the highest during those years. In any event, the young men are avoiding personal contact with women, and the young women are avoiding personal contact with men. Why? Well, it's a number of reasons. The men, to start with the men, they don't want to be the family man. Because if they're the family man, they are the head of the family and they must work hard. It used to be in Japan, you got a job and you had a job with that company for your entire life. It doesn't work that way anymore. They have problems. These young people can't get jobs. If they get them, they are not making a lot of money. It was reported this past week that salary levels are declining in Japan, the last 15 years especially. You have to work in Japan, male or female, 15 hours a day, 6 days a week, to make a decent salary. 15 hours a day. These guys don't want to do it. They don't want the responsibility. And what are they doing? This is strange. They're into virtual sex. They go to the internet to get their girlfriends on virtual reality shows, whatever that means. They also have the porn there. And this is where these young guys are getting satisfied. The porn on TV, the virtual reality, sex, and they play games. Games that have nothing to do with sex. War games, poker, and they love that, and the young men are into that, and they don't care if they don't make that much money. They don't care if they don't have a wife. They don't care if they're not getting laid. Now we go to the young ladies. They're the same, maybe worse. They're independent. They're making some money. They hold on to their money. They have girlfriends they can socialize with. They take trips. These young ladies are taking trips. They don't want the burden of marriage, okay? They believe, these women believe, that marriage and motherhood is to die. They believe marriage and motherhood is to die. These are the young women of Japan. And if they want sex, they get it one of two ways. They get into a very short-term relationship with a man and or sex toys. They're big into sex toys. And that's the way it is in Japan. As a result of which, their population is dropping dramatically over the last 15 years. Now it's terrible. It's moving up to that Japan is close to losing 1 million people a year off its population rolls. Not just because of death, but because they are not getting married and procreating and having children. And this is going to affect the overall economy of Japan. Plus, they're going to have more older people than young people, which is going to create another economic problem, because who is going to take care of the old people? Used to be the young people did. This is part of the Asian culture. No more. So now these senior citizens are going to be dependent on the government. Japan's in for difficult times. Let's see now. The military equipment. Let's talk about military equipment. I wrote an article on this recently for a local newspaper. I've spoken to it for I don't know how many times in the last 2 years on TV, on this show. The police departments get this military equipment. They've been getting this military equipment for well over 10 years. Suppose they don't want it. They want to give it back. Let me tell you, they can't give it back. Let me tell you how this scenario works. The Department of Defense is responsible. They own the property. They own the military equipment. Now, they don't need it all. One, they overproduced. A third of this equipment that goes out to the police departments is new military equipment. Two-thirds is used. But the used ones portion, it's good military equipment yet. It's still usable. The government wants to store or must store and maintain these items of war, or they won't be available to the United States in the event of a bigger conflict or a need in a conflict somewhere in the world. So what they decided to do in their brilliant wisdom in Washington, they said, look, there is a drug war going on. This is more than 10 years ago. We'll say we're going to give this to the police departments to help in the fight of the drug war, okay, to assist them in fighting the drug dealers. However, the real reason was the government did not want to pay to maintain and to store the equipment. So what do? They don't give it outright to the police departments. They loan it to the police department. They loan it to the police departments. I repeat again, they loan it, which means they can call it back whenever they want. In the meantime, the police department is required to store and maintain the military equipment. So many police departments in this country, and especially since Ferguson occurred, want to get back the equipment. It is impossible to return this military equipment to the government of the United States. There are two things that you have to do to return the military equipment. And before you even get to it, the rules say you've got to go through the state in order to return it. The state hasn't been involved in this program at all until the return policy comes into vogue. And they don't know what the hell they're doing. The federal government does, though. They require two things. Proper paperwork. Sounds like the Army. Proper paperwork and additional certification. Well, whatever paperwork is submitted, it's never correct. Believe me, it's never correct. And the government returns it to the police department and says, your paperwork is incorrect, you must correct. And they correct, and they correct, and they correct, and it's never accepted. There's one police department that's been returning with the paperwork's been going back for over 10 years, and their paperwork has never been correct. The other rule they have is you must have an additional certification. The police department must obtain an additional certification in order to return the military equipment. The only problem is no one knows what the additional certification is. I'm for real. I'm telling you the truth. They don't know and they can't find out. So the government, the Department of Defense, rejects the return of the military equipment on the second ground. You do not have the additional certification. I don't know. This is a no-return policy. No question about it. A no-return policy. And our government in Washington, bad enough the police departments are screwing up with this equipment, the initial responsibility lies with the United States government for having come up with this plan to dump this equipment on local governments so they would bear the cost of storage and maintenance. Want to move over to the Pope. I'm Catholic. This bothers me, what's going on. I'm pro-Francis, Pope Francis. We may not agree on everything, but I think he's a good guy, and he's got his eyes open, and he's the first pope in 50 years that wants to open the windows to the Vatican and let fresh air in. The problem is the Catholic Church has a conservative element like the religious right in this country. It's like politics. And they don't agree with what he wants to do, and all of a sudden this new pope, what, he's been a pope a little over a year, 2 years, he's running into all kinds of problems. You will recall there was a synod about a month ago. This is a big meeting of bishops from all over the world, bishops and cardinals. The Pope wanted to do two things. He wanted to make the Catholic Church more welcome to homosexuals, to gays, and just make more welcome. Let's talk to them. Let's be friendly to them. Let's not bar them from going to Mass. And the other thing is, he wanted to permit divorced people to be able to receive communion. In my religion, if you're divorced, you cannot receive the sacrament of communion. And that's heavy for a lot of people. So the bishops and cardinals had a vote on this. And they defeated it, the bishops and cardinals. It required a two-thirds vote. This sounds like the Senate of the United States. Now, I have to laugh when I talk about it. But it required a two-thirds vote. The Pope got over 50%, but he couldn't make 66 2/3%. And so the Pope got beat, and he was embarrassed by all this thing. Now, the bishops still are not happy. The bishops are out there, this religious right group within the Catholic Church is out there knocking the Pope, for all the other things he wants to do in addition to what he mentioned. So now they're talking schism. Schism is a bad thing. You get thrown out of the church if you're guilty of a schism. I think Martin Luther was the last guy who committed a schism. It's been that long. But they're talking that way. One cardinal had the audacity to call the Pope the Antichrist. It's in the Bible. An Antichrist shall come. He shall look like, you know, he's godlike and everything else. But beware, is the Antichrist. He's labeling Pope Francis the Antichrist. This is a very bad situation that the church is going through. It's bad also that its problems have become public because these bishops and cardinals who are part of the religious right want it to be public. They have, in the last several years, they have associated themselves in this country with the religious right. And they love being, you know, on the soapbox, and they make public statements and everything else. They forgot they should be in church talking from the pulpit to their people, period. You don't go out and talk to the whole world. They're like the Democrats and the Republicans now within the church. They are fighting. Let's go to another issue that just popped today. Brittany Maynard. Brittany Maynard is the 29-year-old girl who was dying of cancer. She moved to Oregon so she could commit suicide because Oregon, by law, permits assisted suicide. Brittany Maynard is not a Catholic. Important to note, she is not a Catholic. A top Vatican official today said, he's the bioethics official. He said what she did was reprehensible. I can't believe this came from the Pope. It had to come without his knowledge, because something this big, the Pope would have talked about. He wouldn't leave it to a subordinate that none of us ever heard of. I can't. His name is so long, I can't even pronounce all parts of it. I'm not saying his name, but he's the top bioethics official, reprehensible. Now we have a group of American laymen, the American Life League. This is a Catholic group. And they came out today, the president came out today and said suicide is not the solution. You know, if an outside, one outside group, two outside groups, more outside groups spoke and said something the Catholic Church is doing is wrong, we would say immediately, you know, we are not of your religion. Stay off our backs. We don't get on the backs of the Jews. We don't get on the backs of the Episcopalians. We don't get on the backs of the Presbyterians. Stay out of our bailiwick. But no, the Catholics are speaking up, and she's not a Catholic, and it's none of their business. And if they wish to speak of it from the pulpit on Sunday to the congregation, period. It ends at the doors of the church. It doesn't go outside. It's an inside church matter. Which brings me now to something light, President Obama and Michelle. We all have embarrassing moments. We all have had, at one time or another, our credit cards rejected for whatever reason. Some of us, I'll say honestly, more than once my card's been rejected. I just pull out another card. Well, here's what happened. Last month when the president was in New York City for the UN meetings, he took Michelle out on a date. The two of them went to dinner at a fancy New York City restaurant alone. When the bill came, the president gave his credit card. The waiter came back and said, the card's rejected. The president's card was rejected by the credit card company. The company said afterwards, the president lives in Washington, D.C. His charges are normally from Washington, D.C., nothing from New York. We thought someone might have stolen it or there was fraud. So Michelle fortunately had a good card, and she paid for the dinner. I want to go over to Iran for a moment. These people are crazy over there. We want to make friends. I don't know what the hell we're going to accomplish because we don't think alike. Anyhow, there's a woman. She is both a British citizen and an Iranian citizen. She wanted to go to a volleyball game. You have to understand that in Iran, only men can go to volleyball games. Women are not permitted. Well, this woman said, I want to go, and she went. And she was arrested, and she was charged with, and I quote, spreading propaganda against the ruling system, unquote, just because she wanted to go to the volleyball game. She was tried, found guilty, and sentenced to 1 year in jail. There was a furor, the president, the Pope, presidents of other nations. This is terrible. You can't do this. So the Iranians reconsidered her sentence. And yesterday's breaking news on this issue, and it was yesterday that it came out, her one-year sentence has been suspended. Isn't that nice? However, she must be lashed. That's right. She's going to be whipped publicly. She's going to be tied to a post. People are going to watch, and she's going to be lashed. How many times? They did not say, but she is required to be lashed in whatever next month is. I'm sorry, I said September. I didn't mean it. And that's what's happening over there. Crazy, crazy people. That is the show for this week. I thank you for joining me once again. I know that most of you listen to the show as it is archived or on Facebook and Twitter. I appreciate your listening, your support, your comments, et cetera, et cetera. I wrote a book. I tell you again, The World Upside Down. You should read it. If you like this show, you'll love the book. If you don't like this show, don't buy the book. Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. I look forward to being with you next week. You have a good and safe week in the meantime. Good night.